The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stunningly gorgeous Jill Serkin.
Yeah, I kind of feel that I'm sitting thinking about the cryotherapy now. There's so many bits of us, you and me, that would benefit. I mean, where would you start?
Well, I could send some of mine in.
Yeah, if only you could find a lorry driver to transport it.
If we could find a truck to send my bits in, I could send them over to Ruth and she could slam them in the little freezer there and then send them back when they're done.
Well, it's like double chins, you know, like my profile, my chin has got another life now. Yeah. It's very difficult.
I'll scare myself when I walk past the mirror. I go, whoa, who was that?
Because the thing is, when you're getting old, like you and me, you don't feel old. I don't feel.
No,
I still jump about and think I'm 20.
I know, it's ridiculous, isn't it? I don't know how that works. I don't, you know, that's why I scare myself when I look in the mirror. It's not me.
You scare me.
Well, I know.
When I look in the mirror. But, yeah, it's. I'm just thinking about it, whether all our wobbly bits, whether we could, perhaps we could get, you know, a deal for going every day or for
bulk,
a week
bulk
or a
discount.
Year.
Yeah. Bulk, you see what I did there? Bulk discount.
So what are we doing now? We're talking to Alan.
We're going to talk to Alan in a minute when I introduce him, when I've got my tongue around where he's actually going to do this event.
Yeah, it's not Folkestone.
Yeah, which isn't Folkestone.
No,
yeah.
It's Tenterton.
Yeah.
Which, funny you remember that because it's where you live.
Yeah, I know, yeah, yeah. But I'm going to introduce him in a minute as the Stone Festival, yeah, or something, aren't I?
Or the Stoned Festival.
The Stone Festival. No, it's not that kind of festival. It's not that kind of festival. This is Tenterton.
I've just been singing in Fairport Convention because I love it. I saw them at the Gulbenkian Theatre in the days when we could, and it was just so nice.
Is that you got
Gulbenkian?
You've got to be perfect. Was that Fairport Convention?
No, that's you've got to be.
Yeah,
no,
yeah,
that wasn't them. That was some woman.
Was it?
Yeah, some woman.
You sure?
You've got what? To be.
Yeah, wasn't she the woman out of Fairport Convention?
No.
You sure?
I think the woman out of Fairport Convention, sadly, is no longer.
Oh, I saw my mate Chrissy McVeigh.
Oh, does she still fancy you?
No. Let me tell you.
Is it McVeigh or McVeigh?
Chrissy McVeigh, yeah. I told you she used to live in Wickenborough, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, she moved during lockdown.
Nearer to you?
No. It's got nothing to do with Chrissy McVeigh. I'm just telling you her house.
Yeah.
Yeah, got raided by the police with the couple that moved in there. They tried to turn it into something that they weren't supposed to. I just saw it on
really?
KM site the other
but
day.
After
yeah.
she...
After she left, yeah. She sold it during lockdown to them. It was a pretty beautiful house in Wickenborough, yeah, on the outskirts of Canterbury. And she sold it to this couple that had tried to convert it into something... I'm not sure what.
Being a bit cagey.
I didn't get the gist of the story because I just saw it because the headline was about Chrissy McVeigh and I started to read it. I mean, it's got nothing to do with Chrissy McVeigh, you know, really. It was just her old house.
Do you know what? She's great. Look, I hope she's not listening, but when I hear
she listens all the time, you know.
Well,
she's a fan of mine.
She loves you.
Yeah, she's a fan of mine.
She's mad about you.
Yeah, yeah.
She's been chasing you for years.
Yeah.
But you fight her off, don't you? You bat her off.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Don't mention bats because, you know, we can't. But what I was trying to say was, before you really interrupted and got me on another little, you know, thing, path, is that when you hear Stevie Nicks, I don't know about you, Adam, but she puts hairs on my chest. No, that's not right, is it? Women don't get hairs on their chest. She puts goose pimples on my body. Her voice is, and she's power-packed, isn't she?
Mm.
Amazing. I do love Stevie Nicks. I do also love Chrissy McVeigh, of course.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But she's, you know, you can still listen to her. My kids listen to her, you know. She's timeless. That's all I'm saying.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Fleetwood Mac aren't bad either.
Absolutely.
I saw Peter Green play once in London, and because of all his drugs over the years, he, you know, he couldn't talk, but he was absolutely superb on stage and knew all the lines for his song, every single word. But when he was actually trying to introduce the songs, you could see he was struggling. Yeah,
yeah.
But amazing, amazing.
He should have got Keith Richards up there to do it. He could have done it, couldn't he? Anyway, enough of that. Why don't we actually talk to someone sensible?
Yeah.
That would be so much better, wouldn't it?
Who knows where the time goes? Carry on.
Thank you for that. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the Business Bunker show for the first time, although Alan has been in this studio quite often.
He's very relaxed in here.
He's chilled. He's like he's a folk man. They're chilled. They don't get upset about anything. Mr. Alan Castle, who's one of the organisers of the Tenterton Folk Festival. Alan, good afternoon. Welcome to the Bunker show.
Thank you.
You've been in the studio a lot because we have a folk show of a Tuesday evening, actually, with Keith Peverley, and you've appeared on that many, many times.
Yeah.
And why don't you kick us off and give us a bit of history to the Folk Festival in Tenterton, because it's a massive event. I live in the town, and it's a massive event for the town, and we did miss it so dreadfully last year because of all the shenanigans that were going on. But give us a bit of history to it.
Yeah, well, it basically started off in 1992, when the council, Ashford Borough Council, were putting on various events to celebrate the 150th anniversary of the railway coming to Ashford.
Okay, right.
Because I'd been running folk events since the early 70s, the council asked if we fancied putting on something as part of the celebrations.
So right.
We looked around and we wanted somewhere that where there was pubs that had entertainment licences and somewhere with a nice lot of open space. And Ashford just didn't work.
Right.
So we looked at Tenterden. So in the end, we put on just an afternoon event in Tenterden in 1992. And then the following year, the council said, well, what are you doing this year? In 1994... we registered it as a charity,
right,
as an educational charity, and turned it into an annual event, and it's been growing and taken on a life of its own ever since.
Absolutely. You said you've been running events since the 70s. Is that something you do professionally? Is that your work, or do you work? I think you're kind of semi-retired now, I believe.
I'm completely retired.
Well, you're not, because you work very hard at staging this event. But
I'm completely retired from paid work.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. We all go there.
Yeah.
But when you were organising folk events, was that a professional thing you were doing, or was that a hobby?
No, I actually started doing it when I was an article clerk with a firm of chartered accountants in Elwick Road.
Right.
And I was told that's not really the sort of thing that chartered accountants do.
Yeah.
So I thought, I was also told that chartered accountants didn't have long hair and beards. It's only when it fell out that I stopped doing that.
Right.
So, I started a folk club in the Victoria Hotel,
right,
which was down opposite the railway station. And that gradually moved around to different places as different pubs closed down, etc. Then about the same sort of time, back in the 90s, a guy called Jerry took over the Eight Bells in Tenton and High Street and said to us, if you want to do some stuff in the pub, come and do it.
Right.
So we took over the Eight Bells and started doing sessions and sing-arounds in there, and that sort of was the base of the festival for 10, 15 years.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk, like so many things, it didn't happen last year because of the pandemic and stuff like that. And it's not the kind of thing you can do as a virtual event, really,
well,
is it?
We did, actually.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, we did actually do, we even had the procession and Morris dance.
Oh, did you really?
Virtually.
Right.
Yeah, I got hundreds and hundreds of people just watching it online.
Right.
Sessions and sing-arounds and some pre-recorded concerts and things we did as well.
It's right, we'll go down with the ship, Paul.
Yeah, no, I can hear a tinging sound. What is it?
It's the alarm, but it went off last week. We'll go down with the ship.
Yeah. So give us an overview, because there's lots happens in the festival, isn't there? So give us an overview of all the things that you've got planned for this year.
Yeah, well, we start off on Thursday with a concert, which we call the Around Kent Folk Concert, because we also run a magazine called Around Kent Folk, which is a free guide to folk music in Kent, Surrey and Sussex.
Right.
One of our many things we do during, as a sort of asides to the festival.
Mm.
So we kick off with the Thursday evening concert. Then on Friday we've got concerts, a barn dance, music sessions in some of the pubs, various events of that sort, and that goes on in a similar way through Saturday and Sunday.
Mm.
So we've got something like 45, 50 events over the 4 days.
Right.
Some of them are small events, sort of meet the guest sessions, where some of the guest artists will sit and talk to people about what they do, why they do it.
Yeah.
Others are sort of workshops on how to play a concertina or how to play a banjo.
You should do that, Paul Andrews. You'd love to play a concertina.
A concertina.
Didn't you drive one in the 60s?
Yeah. Mark II concertina. Yeah.
Saturday, of course, there's the big procession, which the public absolutely love.
Yeah.
But I think this year we got something close to 40 Morrisides.
I was going to say, because there's a lot of Morris people hang around in the streets and in all their clobber, and they've always got their pewter mugs hanging from their belts.
Yeah. It's not only Morris dancers, we have Appalachian dancers, Slovakian dancers, Bulgarian dancers, all sorts of different dancers, street entertainers.
Yeah.
Saturday and Sunday, there's a big craft fair on the recreation ground. There's a free music stage.
Mm.
Some of the events are ticketed, others are free.
So yeah, because a lot of it just takes place in the town, doesn't it? You know, outside the wall pack, you get Morris dancers hitting each other with clubs, which is always good fun.
Scaffold poles.
Scaffold poles, all kinds of things. It gets really rough out there sometimes,
My new husband, when he was at uni, joined a Morris dancer thing for the Yale, of course. And I just have horror visions of him trying
to... It always makes me laugh, no matter, you know, they all come in these wonderful costumes and they've all got their dances and stuff, but every single one of them has a pewter beer mug attached to their belt, and it just always makes me laugh. And I think, why do you attach it to your belt? Well, obviously after a couple you can't remember where you've put your mug, so at least, you know, if you drop it, you know where it is.
But how does it reach their mouth?
With it in your hand.
And it adds to the clanging, I suppose. They must unclip it to drink.
Oh, I
presumably
imagine so.
Unless they're ostriches. Yeah.
Unless it's on a string, it could be on a elastic string, couldn't it?
But you'll also notice that lots of the Morrisides have a spare person with them,
right,
who's actually carrying a tray with all the glasses on while
about.
The others are dancing.
Because in Whitstable we've got the black-faced ones. I can't remember what they're called. Black Horse, I think they're called, the Black Horse Morris dancers. Because you have all different sort of clans and teams, don't you?
Oh, yeah, sides they're called.
What they're called?
Sides.
Okay, sides.
Yeah. And there are literally thousands of them throughout the country.
Mm.
There's all different styles of Morris as well. The Cotswold, which obviously comes from the Cotswold.
Mm.
There's Balder that comes from the English-Welsh Balders.
Mm.
There's Northeast, there's Clog, there's Garland.
Clog, you could join
Clog,
that.
Hey, Clogger. Yeah.
He's got a lovely pair of clogs here, so he could join.
I'll tell you a story about...
These aren't Dutch clogs.
I'll tell you a story about my clogs in a minute that she doctored.
Changing the subject from that... what about the crafts?
No, just before you do, I want to hear about the crafts, but I just wanted to ask Alan, I don't know how knowledge he is about Morris, there's a number of stories about where the term Morris dancing comes from. What's your view on that?
There's no definitive answer to it. I think the one thing that's virtually certain is it's nothing to do with Moorish.
Yeah.
And the one thing that is 100% certain is that the blacking up of faces is nothing to do with racial.
Yeah.
It's what... lots of dancing came from the mining areas.
Of course, yeah.
And what did miners look like when they came up out of the pits?
Yeah, pretty dusty.
Faces.
Exactly.
Yeah. Others came from the cotton mills.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of it is also associated... not only with the Morris, but the music that went with it, is to do with begging.
Mm.
The Morris dancers would go out on a special occasion begging for money to buy drink, hence the pewter tankards and the musicians and all the traditions that went with it.
Yeah.
And the last thing they wanted was to be recognised by their bosses, the owners of the cotton mills and the coal mines.
Of course, for pride.
So they blacked up to disguise.
Mm. Yeah.
No, there was absolutely nothing racial about it at all.
I'm glad you put that in before anybody gets their little claws on it all.
Yeah.
And for tourists, it must be, they must love it, because it's a very country, quintessentially English thing. Welsh.
As someone that isn't into folk music particularly, and a resident of the town, sometimes when you get these kind of things, you know, people go, oh, blooming folk festivals on again, but it's not. It's really beautiful. It's a fantastic event, and the entire community loves it, whether you're into folk music, whether you're into Morris dance or anything else. It just suits the town. I don't know any other way of describing it. It's one of the flagship things about that happens in the town, along with our Christmas evenings in December. But the folk festival, it just the town comes alive and everything comes alive, and it's such good fun. Just wandering around, watching it all, and watching all these people smash each other with logs and stuff. It's just brilliant.
Well, I expect to see you Morris dancing this year.
Oh, I always join in.
Now you've got the clubs.
I've been arrested twice.
Did we mention, because I was tweeting, did we mention any headline acts? Or
Most of the acts we book are not what you would call your Fairport conventions.
Yeah.
They're the folk club type of type of folk singers.
Who are
some of them are
amazing. Yeah.
Some of them are internationally known. Most of them tour America, Australia, Canada. People like Brian Peters is always appearing all over the world.
Mm.
One of our most popular acts, I think, this year is going to be Chris and Steve Wilson, who are normally part of what's called the Wilson Family, which is a group of Northeast family singers who sing lots of working songs, mining songs, and there's six or seven brothers. We had them booked for last year. Unfortunately, they weren't able to make this year, so we've got Chris and Steve as a duo.
Oh, that's lovely. And what do they play, guitar or?
No, they don't play anything.
Oh, well, singing?
It's completely a cappella.
How lovely.
Oh, wow.
Singing,
okay.
Yeah.
So you could go along with your banjo and accompany them, Paul Andrew.
Well, it's a cappella. I don't need a banjo, do I?
Well, you could. Oh, yeah, just so you're just going to sing.
Yeah. Well, one thing I must just put in. Paul talks about all the Morris dancing.
Mm.
There's a heck of a lot more to the festival than just what you see in the street. Now, we've got three or four pubs involved. We use the St Mildred's Church as a venue, the Town Hall, the Tentenham Club, the Glebe Hall. Now, there's loads and loads of indoor stuff as well.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to ask about the crafts again. So, crafts, what have you got? I love a craftsman.
Well, we've taken a bigger marquee this year and booked an 80-foot-wide marquee to make it more space, more socially distanced. We thought we were going to struggle to get stalls, but we've actually got more stalls this year than we've had for the last few years, I think, to be honest.
So we've got a few of our Kentish wood people, have you?
We've got wood turners.
Love a wood turner.
Yeah, we've got wood turners, we've got toy makers, we've got leather workers. We've got a guy who brings his lathe and does metal work. We've got cake makers.
Now you got me. Cake
cakes.
Jams and pickles?
Yeah, jams and pickles.
I do love a chutney and a jam and a Kentish chilli.
We've actually got some Produced in Kent members, and you were mentioning Produced in Kent earlier on.
Yep.
We're actually a member as well.
Okay.
Because the festival is Produced in Kent.
Yeah.
There's loads of stalls in the marquee. There'll be a few rides for kids and stuff going on outside. Normally we have a stall selling CDs, but we won't have that this year, unfortunately. But we've got PJ Music, who brings down loads of traditional musical instruments, acoustic guitars, squeeze boxes, and all sorts of accessories that the musicians will like.
Mm.
We've got a curry stall.
Lovely.
We've got New Romney Brewery and Nightingale Cider running an outside bar
for us. There you are, that's got me.
Yeah. She's there.
Yeah.
Old Dairy Brewery are running a bar for the events we're doing in the church. So there's a bar in the church as well.
Ah, there you go.
You can fill your pewter tankard up in the church.
Yeah. Attach it to your belt first.
Yeah.
You could get... No, I won't go there. I was going to make some pun on altered images, but I won't.
So it starts on Thursday the 30th of September to Sunday the 3rd of October, and you've got your folk song and your music, your dance, crafts and traditions. But so is there a day, maybe if I go on Thursday, I'm thinking it might be a bit less crowded.
Thursday, the only thing on is the concert in the evening.
Okay.
Saturday's the big day that the public like, with the procession and all.
Then I could park in your drive, couldn't I?
You could.
Waddle down.
But if you want a quieter day, it's probably Sunday. The craft stores are still there. There's probably about 10 or a dozen Morris sides left.
Left standing.
Some come for the Saturday and Sunday.
A few people slumped under a barrel.
Yeah.
Okay.
What you must do is, if you're not going to commute, is get accommodation booked.
Yeah.
Because we were looking for accommodation for somebody who's coming down from up north the other day, and there isn't any left in Tented.
No. Are there any hotels in Tented? I don't really know. A couple of hotels?
There's four now. But it's pop. You wouldn't believe how popular this thing is.
Well, I would, because I can see.
People book up before they leave next year.
I would imagine, though, there's a few more Airbnbs this year.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, there are a few of those. Yeah. Mm. But a lot of people stay in the travel lodge and stuff in Ashford and just drive in.
Is there a campsite anywhere nearby?
We provide our own campsite for the festival down by the railway.
Yeah.
We've got a farmer's field and we put portaloos and things in.
Oh, brilliant. Okay. So people can pitch up for that.
People can pitch up. As long as they've got a ticket for the festival, they're allowed to buy camping as well.
So it's a fantastic event. It is always, no matter what the weather, there's always something to see and do. It's a whole family thing as well, so you can bring the family. It's a great way of celebrating the end of the summer holidays. Mm. Alan, if people want to find out about getting their tickets and find out more about it, what's the best way to do that?
That is visit our website, basically, which is simple. It's just tentonandfolkfestival.org.uk.
Yeah.
On there you can buy tickets online, buy them by post, or whatever. One thing I do want to emphasise, it's not just for the folk lovers, it's for everybody else.
Yeah.
And it's also for the town, as you say.
Yeah.
KCC did a thing 10 years ago when they said they thought the festival put over £500,000 back into the town's
local
economy.
Shops, yeah, of course.
I think it's probably double that.
I would say it's a lot more than that now.
We got about 5,000 people over the course of the weekend, not all at once, but over the 4 days.
Mm. It is incredibly popular. It's everybody loves the event as well. That's the thing, you know. And there's just, it doesn't really matter whether you're into folk or anything else. There's just so many things going on and so many things to see. And like you say, the procession on a Saturday through the town centre.
I think the thing is, Alan, that music makes people happy, doesn't it? We've had a really tough couple of years or year in a bit. And music for me and for everybody uplifts your spirits.
Yeah, it's good for your health.
Yeah, of course.
Sitting there listening to music or getting up and dancing.
Yeah.
The exercise you get from it. No, just the buzz of the music. Mm.
Yeah. Well, we're all talking about mental health at the moment, and I think music is just such a lovely way of getting together with your family, not just eating. You know, all we seem to do is, you know, what do? We go out for a meal, But this is a different way of enjoying yourself for the day. Mm. So people need to get tickets, don't they?
They need to get tickets for the concerts and barn dances.
Thursday
that
evening,
sort of thing,
and the concerts and also the special shows.
Yeah.
And it says on here workshops. Did you mention the workshops?
Workshops. Some you might call them a masterclass in some cases.
So that's the banjo playing and things?
Banjo playing. Others are just chances to sit and talk about folk-related topics with an expert.
Brilliant. And you've got, I'm noticing here, you've got the Yard Arm Folk Orchestra, and they're going to be in St Mildred's Church. So do they go in for one day, or are they...?
They're just there for Sunday afternoon. They're based up in North Essex. There's 30 or 40 of them. They all play various orchestral-type instruments, but play folk music on them.
Brilliant, that's lovely. And you've got your regulars and local guests. So you've got Bob Kenwood, Chris Roche, Gavin and Julie Atkin, Jerry Crossley, John and Di Cullen, Malcolm Ward, Marsh Warblers.
Yeah.
So are they from Romney Marsh?
Yeah.
And we've also got Peter Collins, Portside, Rattlebag.
Ah.
I often call Paul that. Roger Resch. Spare Parts, that's another one that could go in the cry therapy. Sue Watson, Swinging the Lead, Travelling Folk, and Vic and Tina Smith. And there are a lot more, too, up to 40 Morris sides, as you called them, the sides. I've learnt something new today. And then you've got the folk dance display and the street theatre. Amazing. So much happening.
It is incredibly good fun. I always go along and have done every year since I've lived in Tenterton. I didn't do the virtual one last year, but because there's always something to do. Even if you just stand and watch, there's just so many things to see. It's a brilliant event. And
in the sea shanties.
Yeah. Oh. We they went mainstream with sea shanties, didn't they, during lockdown? Yeah.
They did, of course.
Yeah.
They should have asked us because we've been doing it for 28 years.
Yeah,
wow.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I do love a sea shanty and a beard because beards are very big. And I'm looking at this is an accordion, isn't it? This man playing. Mm. So that must be a workshop.
can't see from here.
Who is playing in some of the concerts. That's Brian Peters.
So is there a difference, Alan, between a, you know, the French accordion where you have to wear onions and garlic and that accordion? Or is it the same thing? So
what you're calling an accordion, we would actually call a melodeon.
Oh.
An accordion is normally a piano accordion, so it's got piano keys down one side
and
buttons down the other. A melodeon has got buttons on both sides, and you play the bass on one side and the treble on the other.
Mm. Not easy.
That's a box-shaped thing.
Are you a musician yourself, Alan?
I struggle to play things and give up.
Yeah, I know that. I know the feeling.
I stick to the administration.
Yeah.
When I broke my leg years ago, I decided that this was, you know, I was sitting there with a leg up for ages. I decided this was the time that I was going to become a rock god. And I started having guitar lessons, and I just thought I'd pick the guitar up and go, you know, and it's really, really, really hard. And I gave up and I'm hopeless. But my new husband can play by ear any song you want, banjo. Yeah. And I bought him a cello in lockdown. It's excruciating.
My eldest is a musician, and he's one of those that he can pick something up and he'll play it in 10 minutes. He lives in France these days, but when he was living with me a few years ago, he rocked up one day. There's banging on the door, and I go to open the door. Where's your key? Oh, I've got my hands full. What you got? Glockenspiel. Where'd you get that from? I found it on a market stall, so I bought it. And then about 20 minutes later, he called me. He had a studio at home. He called me, he went, listen to this. And he banged out this tune on this Glockenspiel. I said, how'd you learn? Yeah, it was easy. Yeah, you just do it like this. Yeah.
Some people can do stuff. It and some cannot.
You just got an ear for it, isn't it?
My brother's a professional musician. He's made his living at it for 50 years. So my niece went to Cheetham's music school.
Yeah.
And my great niece plays various instruments, but they passed me by. I just stick to the admin.
Well, you do it very admirable.
You do a fantastic job, Alan, and you have consistently done a fantastic job.
We've got a good committee as well, not just me.
Yeah. And the whole thing is very well put together. Just talking about that for the last few minutes, though, as someone that organises something like this, is this the most stressful weekend of your life?
No. The most stressful time is trying to put the programme itself together.
Right.
When you've got a list of 40 guests, some of them are coming over from America or Australia or whatever, a list of 10 venues, 4 days, and you're trying to put it all together and make sure you don't put one person in two places at once or miss somebody out completely or get something like that wrong. Once you got past that stage, it's too late.
Right, yeah.
You've either done it or you've forgotten.
It either works or it doesn't. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's a massive undertaking, and as you say, there's a whole gang of you that organise this event, and it's fantastic as entertainment. It's fantastic for the local economy, and we wish you continued success with Alan. And I'm sure this year's is going to be a massive success because people are just desperate to get out, aren't they?
Yeah.
After we've all been locked away for nearly 18 months, you know, to go out and be able to do something like this, I think you're going to be really busy this year.
Well, we hope so.
Yeah. No, I think you will. If you want to find out more, as Alan said, tentativefolkfestival.com is the website.
.org.uk.
.org.uk is the best one for getting your tickets, finding out what's on, and finding out the programme. So do have a look at that. And Alan, for the moment, thank you so much for telling us about the festival. And we wish you fantastic success with it. And I'll be there. And I think Jules might be in the cake stand as well.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at the camping because we've inherited a little camper van.
Oh, she's into camping at the moment. Yeah. She loves a bit of camping.
Yeah, can't sleep, but, you know, I can't sleep in those beds. But we've got a little camper van. It's a 20-year-old Heimer. So I shall look and see. Probably all the pictures have gone, but we'll see. If not, I know someone with a very big garden.
You're not putting it in my garden. I'm telling you that now. Yeah.
But I love the whole thing. What I love is the atmosphere and the joy mixed with good ale, good cider and great cakes and Kentish produce. Mm. You know, you go there and you get your chili jams and your chutneys, all made locally. I mean, a local marmalade I'm buying at the moment from Kelly's. I think it's Kelly's Kitchen. It's just divine, you know.
Right.
Talking of cake.
Yeah, I think... have you got any more emails, Charles?
Yeah, pubs, restaurants and hotels across the country are set to put their troubles to one side next month by going to Tenterden Folk Festival. No, they're not. They're going to celebrate National Hospitality Day. So this is on September the 18th. It's a Saturday. Lord knows the hospitality business, they need this. So it's after the industry's much reported woes over the last 18 months. Plans are well advanced for this one-day celebration of all that is great about UK hospitality. Organised by the sector's main trade associations, professional bodies and charities. So that's September the 18th, that's a diary date. And remember, the Folk Festival starts on Thursday the 30th of September. So you've got lots going on in September.
Absolutely. And in October, there's a Women in Construction Networking Lunch taking place at the South East Construction Expo. It's chaired by Cheryl Causbrook, and she will be in conversation with Amy Goff and Sue Nelson. And you can hear two really successful women share their stories on the 21st of October, a great way for women to meet, share and network. If you want to find out about that, you go to their website, which is www.constructionexpouk.co.uk. Just talking about Sue Nelson, funnily enough, the night before last, Amanda and I watched a film called Close.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've heard about it.
Is that, no, I'm thinking of Closer.
No, Close is it's a true story about a female bodyguard.
Okay.
And the reason I'm telling you this is...
Sue Nelson is one.
No. Sue Nelson had a lunch meeting, and the lady who the film is based on was actually the speaker.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Jackie Davis. Really interesting. Yeah,
English or American?
Yeah, no, she's English, but she's the world's top female bodyguard. Yeah. And if you see the film, it's scary.
I must watch that because...
people
what was it on?
Die.
Was it on Netflix?
Yeah.
Because I was watching when Meghan was, I think she was in Africa, and they went to a village and it got very crowded. And I was watching her female bodyguard. Amazing job, you know, just really doing her job and guiding everybody and protecting Meghan, which was great.
Mm.
Other bodyguards, obviously,
are available.
Yeah. So plans to create a new visitor attraction with a Roman fort. You love a Roman fort.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's where you were born, I think. Mm. Themed playground, a cafe with coastal views and adventure golf have emerged. The project is destined for the East Cliff area in Folkestone. Not Tenterden, Folkestone. Mm. Off Ware Bay Road and above the Warren. Although it's in the early stages and still subject to approval, details of the first phase of the ambitious development have been released, and the scheme centres around an existing underground Roman fort on the clifftop. There's a new wooden adventure play zone, which would be themed on the fort, and raised mounds would give visitors opportunity to walk to higher levels to overlook the coast and the play park. Lots happening in Folkestone, actually, I noticed.
Absolutely. One of the things I heard about that as well, they're going to build ruins.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought there was already a ruin there.
Yeah, but there is, but that's a real one, right? What they're going to do is build a replica of the real one and the ruins so you can climb on them.
Oh, okay. And then will they have sort of reenactments?
I'm sure they will. I'm sure the reenactment mob will get over
around
there with a couple of legions in all their armour. Yeah.
Oh, I don't like that word, legions.
Why?
I don't know. It reminds me of legions, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I find it a bit odd. Mm. But our seaside towns, of course, are having a renaissance, aren't they? They're all packed.
Yeah, they're revived as well.
And that.
Yeah.
Because nobody can go abroad, really. Well, they can if they've got pots of money and they really want the hassle of tests here and tests there.
Yeah.
I'm dying. My son lives in Ibiza and I'm dying to go and see him.
Mm.
But I looked at it and it just seemed like...
I want to visit Bear, my grandson. I haven't seen him for a year.
And he's three now.
He's three now.
I think France, you can get the test free in the pharmacy.
Where Jamie lives, if you could find a pharmacy, you'd be lucky.
He's in a hamlet, is he?
He doesn't live in a cigar, no.
An hamlet.
I wouldn't even call it that. He lives in the middle of nowhere.
Okay, but you know, you'd motor down and you'd find a pharmacy, wouldn't you?
Don't know.
You're very negative about it all. It's
all going off in France.
Yeah,
Jamie was saying to me the other day, there's at the moment, Macron's had to back out of some of the things he's done because it was getting a bit tasty there. But you're not allowed to visit a supermarket unless you've got a vax passport. If the supermarket's over
so many
thousand square feet, it was originally any supermarket or any food shop, but a court of human rights said you can't stop people buying food.
Yeah.
So he had to amend it to say a shopping centre. Well, fairly about 10 miles from where Jamie lives, there's a massive hypermarket, Claire. And Jamie doesn't shop there anyway, but he was driving past it the other day, 2 weekends ago, and he said there were literally hundreds and hundreds of people outside who stormed the doors, kicked the doors in, and just went and helped themselves to the food because they were trying to stop people going in without the passes. Because only 30% of France has been vaccinated so far, so the vast majority of people haven't been vaccinated.
Well, probably their immune systems will end up much better than the ones that have been vaccinated. But
that's neither here nor there. For me, whether you choose to be vaccinated or not is your personal choice, and I have nothing to say on that one way or the other. I've been vaccinated. If you don't want to be vaccinated, I understand, and you can't be vaccinated. The problem that they have in France is they've made it a legal requirement. You can't go anywhere. Officially, Bear, my grandson's due to start school in 2 weeks' time, and officially they're not allowed to take him.
What do they do? Just drop him off, throw him in?
Well, as it happens, the local teacher went, "I'm not having any of that. You just bring him."
She didn't say it like that. She said, being
French, she said it in French. Yeah.
But yeah, Ibiza is very, very quiet. My son, has Ibiza, what's it called now? IFF Kitchen, based in Manston, delivering food all around the UK. But he lives in Ibiza and he has a restaurant on the beach and he hasn't bothered opening it this year because it's just so quiet. Which makes me think it's quite safe for me to go there. But it's the hassle of all the,
My youngest was in Ibiza a few weeks ago and it looked rammed.
Well, maybe.
Mind you, the pool and the bar he was in was rammed. Whether the rest of the island was rammed or not, I don't know.
But at my age, I don't go to those bits, you see.
No, exactly.
I can't wear a thong and all that malarkey.
Mind bleach.
I have a little villa with a pool and I just schlep around there mainly and go to little tiny places.
Yeah.
The same as I do here.
I need to have a break after thinking about that.
Become part of our community to build your social media habits with workouts. Increase your brand's presence and engagement. Go to wedosocialmedia.co.uk to register for 2 free social media workouts every Wednesday. 10:30 a.m. Facebook and 11:30 a.m. LinkedIn.
Loch Associates Group can help you with your employment law, HR, health and well-being and mediation needs. People are our business. It's what we do every day. Find us online at lochassociates.co.uk.
Jobsinkent.com, the quick and simple way to advertise your job vacancies in Kent, with prices from just £99 per job per month. Visit Kent's largest job site, jobsinkent.com.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
What you got, Jules?
Well, a former gas holder site has... I don't know what a gas holder is. Is that a gas...
Those big round things that you used to get, yeah?
Yeah, is that like Battersea Power Station sort of thing, or is that...
No, that was a power station. A gas holder is a big round cylindrical thing that has got a grid outside, and as the gas goes down, it empties... And then when they fill it up again, it comes up again. Used to see them all over the place. They don't have many. They don't use them anymore.
Sounds very Victorian. A former gas holder site has been derelict for 20 years, could be given a new lease of life as a housing development. Oh, really? They've thought of that one, haven't they? Blueberry Homes has submitted a planning application to Tunbridge and Marling Council. Marling Council, seeking permission to build 144 apartments in 2 blocks on the site in Medway Wharf Road. The approximately named Old Gas Works, or appropriately, sorry, named Old Gas Works, will include some flexible commercial space, improved landscaping to the River Medway waterfront, and a new public square. The 2 blocks will each have a roof terrace, and there will be 2 designated play areas in a large communal courtyard. That sounds good. As long as they put some infrastructure in, I don't mind too much.
Cool. Traffic carrying goods and food across the overcapacity Dartford crossing is now higher than ever after increasing by 9% since the pandemic. with all journeys returning to pre-COVID levels. Highways England says the figures published today make the case for a proposed new Lower Thames Crossing stronger than ever. Daily journeys at Dartford on average are well above the 135,000 capacity for the tunnel and the QE2 bridge, both of which were designed, or the QE2 bridge was designed 60 years ago. Since lockdown, 42% of vehicles using the crossing have been carrying goods, which has gone up from 33% in 2019.
It's interesting because I went took my mum to the beautiful Rosslyn Beach Hotel in Essex, in Thorpe Bay. Was it 2 weeks ago? I introduced her to Porn Star Martinis, which she had three. And but when we look at the traffic, my goodness, coming back I can't remember, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, the traffic going into Essex was unbelievable. It's just reached its capacity, hasn't it? Queues, traffic everywhere.
Absolutely.
You look like you were going to disagree with me.
No,
you had a disagreeing face on.
No, I was just amazed that everyone was going to Essex. If you said they were leaving Essex, I could understand.
Yeah, but that's what I said to my new husband. I said, who are all these people? So they must be people working outside and going home, I suppose, because it was sort of, you know, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. But, I'm an Essex girl, so...
I know, that's why I was saying it.
Yeah, but... you know, traffic is mad and all the roads closed. I don't know if you guys have noticed, when I go back to Whitstable, so many roads closed, completely closed off for roadworks.
Loads of silly bits of roadworks, nobody doing anything in them.
I know, just signs. And I never believe the signs anymore, so I go off and then I start thinking, oh, this is a bit quiet, nobody coming the other way.
And I can be a bit ranty about this, because, you know, all up the A28 from where I live to Ashford and all of that, for the last few months, they've had dozens and dozens and dozens of roadworks all the time. Yeah. You know, every 10 minutes, there's another set of roadworks and another set of traffic lights. And while they're doing all this work, they haven't bothered to fill in any of the potholes.
No.
Yeah, the roads are still absolutely littered with potholes.
They could pop a bit, because I had a hole in my patio and my builder popped round on Sunday, which is why I was late for your due, because he just appeared.
You had your own pothole.
Yeah, I had my own pothole, and I've been asking him, he's so busy. Builders are ridiculously busy. And so he popped round on Sunday without telling me, just appeared and told me off because I didn't answer the phone. I was swimming. And he filled in the pothole for me on the patio. And while he was doing it, I've had ants going in my pool from the outside. And I said to him, they're getting in here. So he concreted all the, you know, where they were getting in.
He blocked up the ant hole.
Sort of, well, he grouted, I think you'd call it.
He grouted
so
it, yeah.
The edge of the house, you know, is, the old brickwork was crumbling. But why don't they do that at the same time? If my builder Adrian can do it, why don't they do that? Fill in the potholes with their little bit of tarmac or whatever they got under their arm.
There's no ends.
Good one.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Right. Here's a quick update on the South East Construction Expo. The expo will be live at the South of England Event Centre, that's at Ardingly, on the 21st of October. But because we have the technology, we are also going to be live streaming the event. What this means is, if you're exhibiting, you will, in addition to your physical stand, get an online presence in a virtual booth, totally free, so loads more construction businesses can see your products and services. If you're a visitor, you'll have fantastic networking opportunities, both live at the expo and by visiting our virtual networking rooms. This is where you can connect to both virtual and live attendees. The speaker sessions will be streamed live if you're attending, or virtually attending, and you miss any of the speakers, live recordings are available for catch-up. The South East Construction Expo is where you'll find out about major projects and investment opportunities, hear from industry-focused speakers sharing high-value content. You'll have a free meet the buyer with top UK construction companies, live demos of great new innovative products, how to profit from the many new ways of modern construction, meet thousands of construction businesses, and some great networking. If you want to find out more about it, go to their website, which is constructionexpouk.co.uk. That's constructionexpouk.co.uk.
And there's plans for a new luxury glamping site with a heated swimming pool and a petting zoo.
Blimey.
We used to have notices about that in the...
In the swimming pool. You weren't allowed to do that, were you?
In the 70s, yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't a zoo, though, was it?
But, no. Well, it was a bit like a zoo,
There were signs.
It was a bit like a zoo, yeah.
Don't get that in my pool.
No.
I have got a rubber duck in there, but nothing else.
Have you?
Yeah. Fifield Lodge, it's in School Lane, Borden, which is near Sittingbourne, for those who don't know the area. And they want to offer the best glamping experience in the county. It's got four new pods. I think they're like those Teletubby things.
Yeah.
Including proposals for 6, 4 and 2 bed pods made out of timber to its site, which has also has an existing accommodation known as Alpaca Lodge. Alongside the bed, each pod will have recycling, a cycle store, shower and toilet, a communal kitchen block and a small area of decking out front. Found just off the A249 with roadworks most probably.
Yep.
Sittingbourne, and close to the Isle of Sheppey and Raynham, the proposed glamping site is being billed as perfect for couples, family and friends wanting short breaks and weekends. So I guess that's not open yet, but you can contact them or find details on kentbusinessradio.co.uk.
Fantastic. There's some bandstand concerts in Brenchley Gardens, Maidstone, that are going to be worth a visit.
Lovely.
Maidstone's Brenchley Gardens is set to host a series of events this summer for everyone to enjoy free of charge. The concerts have been organised by the Maidstone Area Arts Partnership and Make Some Noise Studio, with funding from Maidstone Borough Council. And they're going to be held on the Victorian Bandstand in the gardens set in the heart of the town. Their Sunday afternoon events will include big band, jazz and brass band music, while the Saturday concerts will offer alternative music from local bands. Bit of punk, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Sunday the 5th of September, the John Hamilton Big Band. Saturday the 11th of September, Up Sea, Down Sea, Spinner, Gypsy Jazz and Pip Bowers. Sunday the 12th of September, the Invicta Jazz Orchestra. Saturday the 18th of September, Stacey and the Freeloaders, Best Intentions, The Dredgerman and Mickey Price and John Fuller. And then Sunday the 26th of September, it all rounds up with the BAE Systems Brass Band. To help visitors enjoy the beautiful surroundings of Brenchley Gardens, the council has also introduced bespoke deck chairs with a free for people to use throughout the summer.
Oh, bespoke deck chairs sounds lovely.
Yeah.
There, what does that mean? They're all differently branded and stripy.
I don't
and
know
things.
What a bespoke deck chair is. I have enough trouble putting up an ordinary deck chair. Yeah,
well,
about
you get
bespoke
your
one.
Fingers trapped, don't you? If you're not careful.
Hurt yourself.
I went to a gig once where they had those huge ones, you know, really like giant ones where you can sit about 10 people in.
Yep.
Which are rather nice. Wildlife Park in the county has been named one of the best family-friendly eco-attractions in the UK. A lot of family-friendly things today, have you noticed?
Yeah,
it's the Wildwood Trust. As you know, it's based in Herne, which is near Canterbury. It came third nationwide in a survey carried out by uswitch.com. It scoured more than 34,000 four- and five-star reviews on TripAdvisor for eco-friendly attractions and compiled its own top list. Six categories were used to produce the top sites, such things as enjoyability, family compatibility, food availability, affordability, conservation and eco-friendly components and cleanliness. I would want to know about the queues. That's what I like. I hate queuing. Like Americans say, line.
Yeah.
I hate a queue. I really don't like a queue.
Yeah.
You know, it's
do you jostle?
No, I'm English, aren't I? I queue very sweetly. With my elbows tucked in, but I just don't like queuing.
And do you moan while you're doing it?
I do moan, yeah. I often just walk away and go hungry.
Yeah.
I can't bear a queue.
Yeah, absolutely.
And of course, we had to get used to them, haven't we? I had an idea that all these queues we've had to do because of COVID, Paul Andrews, that the shopkeepers should give out little tickets, like raffle tickets and a number. Right. And then you could wander off to another shop and then they go, number 15, you just rush.
Yeah, and then you don't hear. And they go, right, number 51. And then you have to start all over again, don't you?
And I also thought at Margate when I was sent to A&E because of my AstraZeneca, because I was going to get a clot or something, that she said it'll be 8 hours all triumphantly, and why don't they, we've all got mobile phones, why can't they say go away and we'll text you and give you an hour window or a 2 hour window.
I'll see what you've done there.
Why would they make you sit for 8 hours?
That's part of it. That's the whole idea behind that, is to make you go home.
Well, one lady came in because you couldn't see doctors, of course, they were all hiding at home. So one lady, she said, it'll be 8 hours. And the lady said, can I make an appointment? She said, no. Yeah. But why don't they in this day and age just say, right, 8 hours, come back at...
Don't even get me started on that.
Yeah, it would be a good idea, wouldn't it?
Don't even get me
technology,
started.
Technology, just
don't even get me started on that. A department store with a difference is set to launch at the former Debenhams store next month as part of a £2.5 million project. The huge sum is being invested in the site by a new retailer called 1517, which will eventually operate on four floors of the empty High Street building in Canterbury. The first two floors will open in September, while bosses are also in discussion with an escape room operator and looking to bring activities such as crazy golf, darts and axe throwing. Now, what about that, eh?
Axe throwing?
Yeah, yeah. Should we form an axe throwing team, guys? Yeah. That's a
well, you could
idea,
do that maybe at Tenderton Craft Fair and Folk Festival.
They say the mix of retail and entertainment. Well, that's entertaining, isn't it? Getting you walk out with an axe in
it's
your
It's not
head.
A big area. Yeah. I mean, it'd be flying axes.
It will provide a vibrant and fun shopping experience. I'm sure it will. It will be the first location in Kent for 1517, which operates the Fresh Local and Wild brand. The Fresh Local and Wild brand is some kind of Viking brand, is it, by the sound of it? Focuses on local produce and is complemented by a cafe as well as an artisan food hall on the ground floor. There'll also be numerous familiar concessions covering beauty, fashion, homeware on the upper floors.
I love the fact that they're trying to just think outside the box a bit with Canterbury and other towns,
sure.
You know.
Yeah.
And I keep going mad every time the government or whoever it is says, you've all got to go back to your desks, you've all got to, because the high streets are suffering. Because if you're in working from home, you're going to support your local high street. So
absolutely.
We don't all have to go to Shoreditch or, you know, the City of London or whatever. If they had local people in London, they could pop down to their coffee shop or their sandwich place.
Absolutely. Right, we're at the end of the show.
Are we?
So I want to wrap up with a few things. On last week's Business Bunker Extra Show on Thursday, I had a long conversation with Simon Pollard of Simple Life.
Oh, yeah.
And he announced the launch of his book, which is A View Over the Wall. We've now got a link to buy that. So if you're interested in getting a copy of the book, if you go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/extra show, you can find a link to purchase A View Over the Wall by Simon Pollard. And then this Thursday, you're going to like this, Jules. I'm going to interview Robert Mars and Stephen Scarman, and they run a company called The Pure Collection, and they make cosmetics from very exotic oils.
Ooh, what kind of oil? Emu?
No, you've got to listen. You've got to listen to find out, because they talk all about what they're doing. And they started this business. They used to own a hotel and spa in Marrakesh.
Okay.
And they started providing cosmetics in the hotel using local Moroccan oils.
Well, that would be the one off the tree, won't it? I've forgotten what it's called.
It's prickly pear.
Oh.
Yeah, a prickly
sounds
pear
very
is
Winnie
one of
the
them.
Pooh.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. No, it's Baloo in the Jungle Book. Mm. Where have you been? So listen on Thursday. Anyway, 1 o'clock on Thursday, I'm on the extra show with Robert Mars and Stephen Scarman talking about the Pure Collection. But I want to say a huge thank you to the lovely, gorgeous, wonderful Ruth Hyde of Cryojuvenate, to the absolutely fantastic Mr. Alan Castle of the Tenterton Folk Festival. Thank you so much for being on the Business Bunker Show.
He's the director, you know.
Oh, he
director.
Is indeed. He is indeed.
Yes.
Yeah. And do visit the festival, which is on the dates, Alan, again?
Thursday the 30th of September to the Sunday the 3rd of October.
Fantastic. We'll see you all in Tenterton for that. Get your tickets by going to tentertonfolkfestival.org.uk. But we'll be back with another show next week. Thank you for joining us. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
This is Channel 2.